and the Mosaic Code and the Code Napoleon. They've all been great legal codes, which we have cheerfully broken. We find that in every profession, the search for profit has resulted in the corruption of ethics. We realize everywhere that man has not been able to withstand the glamour of temptation. Temptation seems to be something that makes it possible for you to do as you please. Another interesting point is man's oversight. In fact, he's probably a lot blinder than Milton was in the ethical and moral sense, because man has become oblivious to the obvious consequences of his own conduct. We have had our Alexander, who died outside the walls of Babylon from dissipation. But dissipation goes on, and nobody seems to have done anything about it. We have the conquest of Hitler. We have the conquest of Genghis Khan. Always tragedy, murder, and death. But conquest still goes on. We have all the private problems that were criticized and condemned 5,000 years ago, but we haven't gotten over them. The Code of Hammurabi, King of Babylon, supposedly dictated by Nebo, the Lord of the Writing Table, said if a man builds a house and he doesn't build it properly and it collapses, the builder is responsible and must replace it. There'd be a lot of people out of work if we made that stick. That any individual who makes a product, representing it to be something, and it is not what it is represented to be, has committed a crime against society and a sin against God. And get out and clean it up. Well, they tried it 2,000, 3,000 years ago. We know definitely that many of the ancient Egyptians had codes. And that among other codes, well, there's one in Egypt in the Book of the Dead that is well worth remembering. In that particular work, gossip is listed among the major sins that can keep the individual out of heaven. You know, it would be an awful hard time around here if we ever enforced that one. Many people would be speechless. But the ancients had some good ideas, but we've done nothing with them. We have also found from antiquity the principles of government. Lycurgus knew the rules of government. Thales knew the rules of government. And they applied them in their own time. And they succeeded as long as they were able to control the ambition of individuals. So everywhere we find not necessarily a slithery snake somewhere. We find rather a constant little pressure inside of ourselves saying to us all the time, you can get away with that if you want to. So we get away with all kinds of things and completely forget when we look around us that no one is getting away with anything. This is the thing we haven't realized. Milton makes a great point of that. After the fall, a man is placed in a new world that God created for him. God did not want him to perish. He was no longer able to stay in paradise because he was no longer the innocent child. But he should have a good place to live, a proper place. So God created in his wisdom the earth. And this was to be the world in which man was to work out his destiny and redeem himself. Here he was to have everything that was necessary, but he had to work. Here he had every opportunity to build a beautiful world, but he had to decide to do it. So the Lord, instead of sending him into perdition, gave him a planet to work on. Gave him a very beautiful planet, which was so lovely, so pleasant, overshadowed by divine right, that it offended Satan to the marrow of his bones. Satan decided he had to get control of that planet. And to get that control, he got all his legions together, and he invaded the planet and took it over. And that which had been intended to be a very wonderful place was suddenly beset with all the sins, crimes, and delinquencies of the fallen angels. Now, here we have another very interesting problem to consider. The angels that fell were rebels against deity. They become a symbol of rebels against truth. They become emblematic of the pressures of an anti-Christ power. They are selfishness, superstition, and fear. And through them, sin, guilt, and death came into the world, according to Milton. These were not part of the original plan, but they were necessary when that plan was broken, because they became the penalties of the errors that man was committing. In other words, no matter how hard he tried, how rich he became, death stood to take it away from him, until he learned how to so live that his values were incorruptible. The New Testament, carrying on into the Paradise Regained, is the problem of man storing up his treasures in heaven rather than depending upon the banks and the stock exchange. Well, many people have been wiped out in the stock exchange, but no one has been destroyed because he possessed a treasure of internal virtues. And I remember one day when I was down on Wall Street, one of my slumming expeditions, when I was starting out in life, a man walked out of the stock exchange on Wall Street and 50 feet away from me shot himself to death. This was not due to heaven. This was not due to a vengeance of God. It was due to the fact that the individual had so adversely conditioned his own temperament, his own disposition, that he could not survive the loss of a material gain. It was taken from him. He had nothing left to live for. In 29, when they had the bad times, one man told me, he said, I lost all I had, but it was worth it because I had the first good night's sleep that I ever had. There was nothing more to go, so I could rest. So all these things add up to the mysterious forces which are personified in the biblical stories. These forces represent the unfoldment of man's own potential. So we find Milton explaining in these terms how man has to take over and wrest from powers of evil the control of his own planet. We probably were never as aware of this difficulty as we are right now. We suddenly realized, whether we like it or not, that we are custodians of a planet in trouble. That it is no longer possible to simply say the other fellow has to do something about it. There is no longer no area where we can go and explore and establish a primitive way of life again. We cannot escape the pressures that are closing in on every hand. These pressures are not inevitable. These pressures are not the vengeance of deity. These pressures are our own mistakes coming home to roost, and we're going to have to do something about them. And this is exactly what was the idea, as Milton tells us, of the new world that was created for Adam and Eve after they left or lost their paradisical home. They lost the complete purity of life. They lost the complete acceptance of the divine will. They were children. And then all of a sudden they weren't children anymore. And they suddenly faced themselves. And they made themselves girdles of fig leaves to conceal or cover themselves. And these represent to a certain degree the vast body of cultures, traditions, social mores, and everything you can think of. Everything that you can think of in a form to cover the emptiness of the inner self, to disguise the poverty of the self by concealing it beneath the luxury-stricken outer personality. In other words, we began to cultivate the habit of the famous house paint slogan, save the surface and you save all. So we've been trying to save the surface ever since. And we're spending billions of dollars every year dressing up the surface. We're doing everything you can think of to look our best. and most cases do our worst at the same time. So we are finding that the effort to conceal our own weaknesses doesn't work very well. Instead of producing a kind of a bluffed culture that would fool ourselves and maybe a few other people, we find the whole thing falling apart. And the only answer to this collapse is the realization that the solution lies within ourselves. For into the human being's compound is not only added the physical sources of energy and so forth, but within that same compound is the inevitable and eternal presence of deity. Within mankind, there is life simply because there is a divine power in man. The divine power is still there, always has been and always will be. When that power departs, death follows. So we have within ourselves at all times the potential of self-correction. It is possible for us to change our ways because within our nature is a higher way which we'll have a long time before we can catch up with entirely. But there is within us the potential of infinite good. This potential has to be cultivated. Milton found out in his day that this was the weakness in the educational system. Education was not looking for that union with the divine, which is the secret of human security. Education was not teaching the individual to be true to the divine birthright, which was his natural heritage. Education dealt with secondary matters and tertiary matters. It dealt with making a living or gaining a reputation or having office in public or something of this nature, or perhaps, worst of all, settling down for life on the campus. It was not solutional to things. It did not teach the individual the mystery of his own destiny. Yet that mystery was unfolded to Adam and Eve by Raphael while they were still in the garden. In other words, the intuitive faculty was still there. Man knows, if he goes deeply enough into himself, the answer to his own problem. But he doesn't want to explore that area too thoroughly, because if he finds out what he should do, he may not be able to do what he should not do with a good spirit. He might feel reformed rising within him, which would be most discomforting. The individual still wants to do exactly as he pleases. And this willfulness, according to the Zohar, for this fell the angels. Self-will, as opposed to divine will, is the mystery of good and evil. Self-will represents a small fragment within each of us that never yet has won any major problem or defeated any major evil. Self-will is the willingness to depend entirely upon the gratification of personal desires. The mystics of all nations, the Hindus, the Chinese, and even the Greeks and Latins, realized that self-will was a tremendous force. That self-will can and does, in most instances, completely control the individual. And furthermore, the collective self-will controls the world. Therefore, the only problem that we have to really consider is how to re-educate the self-will. How to bring the self-will into harmony with the divine will, so that we can say honestly, not our will, but thine be done. This development of the inner will to achieve the release from evil is part of the theology of many of the early church fathers, and perhaps especially it was present in the writings of Ambrose and several of the well-known saints. But this self-will with us is merely the strength of gratification. Self-will sustains us while we make a mistake. He does it because we are basing our entire way of life upon externals. The individual is much more concerned with his adjustment to the outer world than he is with his adjustment to the inner life. And yet, without adjustment to the inner life, not only his own outer world, but everyone else's will fall apart. The individual cannot survive if he compromises with principles. He thinks he can, but not only in this life, but in the great pattern of things, integrity is the only asset that is permanently acceptable in nature. So, not having listened to the voice of Raphael in the garden, Adam and Eve started out into a world in which they propagated and propitiated the powers of self-interest. They suddenly knew themselves as beings, but they did not know the power that was locked within them. They realized they were punished. We are all punished. But they hated to accept the fact that they were the responsible source of their own trouble. So all the way down through to the time of Noah, the problem of the multiplying and replenishing the earth was hampered and destroyed by the absolute abandon to gratification or to the fulfillment of personal desires. And this pre-Noah world represents, in a sense, perhaps young people graduating from school, now on their own, and desires and determining to do as they please. And in most instances, there is a great disillusionment ahead. The individual has now power, but not principle. He can do these things, but he doesn't know why he shouldn't. He can take a beautiful and perfect situation and mutilate it without accepting responsibility. He can lie, but if this lie accomplishes something for his personal benefit at the moment, he feels personally justified. And this situation has also now more or less gotten down into the religious life of the person. Religion that was once a bulwark of integrities is now badly compromised. And today, religion has also felt the depression of lack of integrities. So finally Noah came along, the only one just in his generation, and the world was inundated by a flood. Now in the Bible, if you go back to the original Hebrew, the word deluge does not mean water. The deluge means an oblivion, a tremendous descent of futility upon the earth. It was more, we might say, the complete loss of the integrities, the virtues, the principles. It was chaos rather than water. And over this devilish situation, Noah and his family were preserved. This situation also can be made contemporary at any time, because in the experiences of humanity, the clock, as we know it, is not the determinant. Events determine their own consequences. Timing is by means of the relationship of situations that arise. Night is when darkness controls the soul. Day is when light controls the soul. All the different time periods, cycles, and so forth tie into moods and attitudes of human beings in various stages of their unfoldment and development. Disillusionment is the deluge, and it comes inevitably in the course of human experience. The mistakes we make finally come down upon us in a heap of trouble. And we find the alcoholic, who is a moderate drinker. He gets along fairly well. He has been forced out of the Garden of Eden because his integrities are not very good, but he can still make a living, and he can still plant a field and fulfill the admonition to go forth and replenish the earth. But the longer he goes on with this alcoholism or this delinquency that he may have, it slowly takes hold of him. And instead of being a moderate drinker, he gradually becomes an alcoholic. And the moment he is an alcoholic, then the deluge has come. The great darkness has descended upon him. And in many instances, he doesn't even want to recover. And he goes down in utter futility into a situation that has gradually built up. And the first centuries of humanity in the Bible, after the loss of the Garden of Eden, can be likened to the problem of the individual who starts out on a career of compromise, trying to achieve worldly applause and ignoring the needs of his own nature. Naumann say, well, after all, he had no way of knowing better. His parents couldn't tell him, society doesn't tell him. How is he going to find out in time not to make these mistakes? Well, education should provide him with one factor, experience. He should learn to observe the consequences of the action of the law of cause and effect. There is no person in trouble who hasn't had a warning of some kind. If the individual becomes a narcotic trafficker, a young person, he's arrested. Perhaps he's fined, perhaps he's disciplined, perhaps he's given 6 months in jail as a first offender. Now, if he's a first offender, that was his last offense, he would have learned his lesson. But it isn't. He comes out and repeats. Now, it's the same way with most of the problems of life. The individual making a compromise with principles has a tendency to drift along and get deeper and deeper into trouble until finally he is part of that world which has to be destroyed by a deluge. Now, the deluge doesn't mean that everyone dies. The deluge doesn't mean that water or air or anything else must fall from the sky. It means that the individual is drowned in his own mistakes, and a civilization lacking that or working on that basis is drowned in its own mistakes. Now, at the present time, a lot of people think we're down the first time at the moment. But we haven't gone down for the second and third time as yet. But then when you go down for the first time, there's a superstitious belief that your life goes in panorama before your eyes and you can still be rescued. There is always a chance to rescue if the individual or the collective learns a lesson. If an experience means something, then there is always the possibility of further help. But if the individual passing through these emergencies learns nothing, refuses to accept the consequences of conduct, refuses to change his ways, then he continues until he is dissolved in the flood of his own mistakes. And this is becoming an increasingly common condition. Now, religion has its place in this problem also, for gradually we have lost the realization that religion is a cooperative enterprise. The purpose of religion is to help all human beings to an inner reconciliation of their lives with the principles of truth. But today, too many religions are simply battling each other. The competitive spirit has come in, and competition of all kinds belongs to the world of errors. Competition is the thing that causes the individual to compromise his principles in order to secure an advantage. And various religions constantly berating each other, calling each other heathens, and demanding a complete allegiance to a creed rather than to a truth. All this is just part of that conspiracy by which the principle of evil is constantly at work in our lives. So everywhere we turn, we find that Milton has certain grounds for his assumption that Satan and his angels have taken over. But he promptly tells us it isn't essentially necessary, it isn't inevitable. So in the second part, Paradise Regained, Milton emphasizes the Christ ministry. He emphasizes the fact that even when the powers of evil were plotting to destroy the Garden of Eden, the Messiah was present with his Father, and that the Messiah promised to his Father that he would intercede for the salvation of mankind. So his Paradise Regained is the story of the intercession. It is the story of the rise of a great example of integrities, a great principle of virtue, not as complicated nor as dramatic as the Old Testament, but working definitely upon the principle of love and honor. So that whereas man today considers love as merely a physical emotion, in the New Testament and in the concept of Christ, love is the saving grace of that which is so fond of something superior to itself that it will sacrifice the lesser for the greater. Love is therefore the sacrifice of of self-will in order to express dedication to the labors of divine will. It was through hate and conspiracy that the angels fell. It is through love and fraternity that man rises again, and in the course of it also saves the angels. Because it is only through man's own intercession that which fell of its own corruption can be saved. But man himself has within him always and forever the power to achieve the integrities that are necessary. So into the compound of human ambition, which was largely dominated by the satanic impulse to corruption, there emerges the symbol of purity, the symbol of dedication, the symbol of an integrity which cannot be corrupted. And in this we find the changes that are necessary in the life of the individual. Most people today, if they do not like something, they waste a great deal of energy hating it. And at the end of that time, they are gone and the problem is still there. Therefore, hatred solves nothing. The individual... there's a story in one of the old Lives of the Saints, one of the ancient books that had to do, like the Golden Legend, of a monk in his cell. And he was meditating, and he was praying for help and guidance, and trying to fight the evils that were within his own nature. And there was the cloud of smoke, and the devil came up through the floor. And the devil... the priest looked, the old monk looked at the devil and was very much startled and surprised. But instinctively, without realizing it, he blessed the devil. Instantly it changed into an angel. So this is something that has a certain moral value to almost everyone. It deals with the idea that one of the ways of making good out of things that are wrong is to try desperately to help rather than to criticize. To try and see good as far as possible is to strengthen good. To take an incident which is unpleasant and make it a lesson is to transmute base substances into gold. Alchemy is the transformation of the negative aspects of human experience. It is the things that have happened to us used to perfect our own lives. So in the alchemy, the transmutation of base substances means that all the physical experiences of life must be interpreted in terms of their spiritual values. Everything that happens must strengthen the inner life, either directly through inspiration and encouragement, or indirectly through experience and resolution. Always, the human being must use only the highest possible means to correct the difficulties from which he suffers. If he tries to correct a mistake by making another one, he is not advancing his cause. So in this problem, we find that the human being sitting here today, a long time away from Milton, the human being is faced with this whole great biblical drama, a perpetual drama, a drama that is present in the rise and fall of nations, that may well be involved in the formation and gradual disintegration of solar systems and universal systems, but a problem that also sits right on our own doorstep, that there has to be in the life of the individual some way of changing the conduct which is destructive to himself and others. When we become involved in a religious organization, normally, we like to believe that we are going to live a better life. We want to talk about baptism, and there are a great many people who think that the individual is in desperately bad shape if he isn't baptized. He's got to be baptized into something. But the Essenes gave another definition of baptism. They said that the real water of baptism is the sweat of honest labor. The Essenes labored to build homes for people. They made no charge for that work. They took wood and timbers and they gathered together and they built a little house for a newly married couple so that they would always have a home. And when they were finished, they left. No responsibility rested with the family. If it wished to be grateful, it could. Because nothing can prevent us from being grateful if we are so minded. But there is no problem that can be solved merely by being, as Voltaire said on occasion, hit over the back of the head with a douche of water. This will not do it. It is necessary for the individual to realize that baptism is dedication. It means absolutely nothing unless it leads to a conviction of responsibility for character. So Milton got into trouble too, because he had a rather difficult disposition. He wasn't by any means perfect. He was the last to believe that he was. But he was one of those men that worked like the devil in the name of the Lord, and he did the best he could. And he did accomplish a great deal. But he was, again, limited by his time, and this limits everyone. There are things we cannot do now that we may do 50 years from now. There are things we do now that we should have stopped doing 50 years ago or 50 centuries ago. But there are still changes that must come, new discoveries, new unfoldments, new realizations of values, new experiences in all types of consciousness and instinct and intuition. These things are coming. But at the moment, we should try our best to make a constructive foundation for tomorrow. We are passing on at the moment a disaster. We are passing on to the young and the unborn problems that should have been solved thousands of years ago. But we have completely misunderstood the purpose of life. Now, Milton points out that we have made the mistake primarily because we have assumed that death is an end. That we have assumed that we have no permanence, that we are only able to be here for a short time, and from there on we must face the eternal consequences of conduct, according to Christian theology. But what we really have to recognize is something very much more important than that. We have to realize, as Milton brings out also, that anything that can be destroyed by death, as we know it, cannot be regarded as essential to the unfoldment of man. Only that which transcends the grave is worth having while you're here. Instead of assuming that we could save up treasures in heaven and do as we please here, is to get into trouble. We carry into the afterworld that which we have accomplished. We become in another way what we are. We give up what we have and must depend totally upon the integrities that we have developed. So Milton is very essentially determined to point out that the individual is under the control of a situation which he fully knows. The human being knows that he has his years are numbered. Maybe a few more or a few less. But he knows the future of himself. He must leave behind everything that he has. Therefore, it is not reasonable or right that he should spend all his life accumulating the things he has to leave behind. That there must be a part of his life devoted to that which he can take with him. And the only thing he can take with him is himself. A redeemed or revitalized or regenerated inner life. He can take his dreams and his hopes and his aspirations, but he cannot take his worldly goods. And he does not know when the day comes. Between natural incidents, accidents, war, catastrophes, plagues, all these crimes, all these things, no one knows how long he's going to be here in this particular embodiment. Therefore, from the day he is old enough to think, he must devote more and more of his attention to those things which permit him to depart in honor from this world when that time comes. Otherwise, the whole experience of life is lost. And it is the loss of this experience that Milton decries mostly. He realizes in some way, just as he didn't like the way England was governed, and he tried to do something about it. But unfortunately, the remedy was about as bad as the crime, and very little was accomplished. But he knew also that nations can never live together, that governments can never serve their purposes until they are motivated by integrity and fraternity and dedication. That they must be honorable. That they must not compromise their realities. And the same is true of every person. Each of us, in our own funny little way, is trying to live easily or trying to get away from certain difficulties, but we have to face into the emergencies of personal existence. Because that is the way of paradise regained. The individual is here because he's imperfect. There's nobody here that's perfect. It has been said there was only one person in this world who has ever been perfect, and they killed him. So we are not perfect. We are not near it. But it is possible for us to come a little closer to the destiny for which we are intended. The human being is not a body primarily, but a life in a body. And it is the release of this life, the glorious expression of the best part of ourselves, that constitutes growth and brings with it harmony, peace, and security. And because, actually, we are a temple, a building in which there is the presence of the divine, an altar in the human heart, in which we must come and face the truths of life, and that in this heart body we are all servants, that we are all here to see that the good in ourselves has a chance. We are here to honor that which is most honorable in ourselves. And in so doing, we will honor that which is most honorable in the world. And it would be worthwhile to read at least an abridgment or digest of Milton's poems, because they can be transformed into contemporary messages. The whole story tells what has happened to humanity within the knowledge of the living, and which can be restored from the history of those who have gone before. The whole story of paradise lost is man compromising his own integrities for the justification and satisfaction of his ambitions and appetites. As long as this goes on, we're going to have the same thing. And until a better way of life is incorporated into our educational system, until it becomes a part of our governmental pattern, until it becomes the ethical foundation of our professions, until these changes take place, we will be victims of a system of human competition which has destroyed every civilization that is gone and is undermining rapidly those that are still here. And to have paradise regained is simply the human being has to put his world in order. If he does, there is peace, security, and all the necessities of life can be made available to those that need them. Ambition dies. There is enough of everything. While ambition lives, some will starve. It is then part of a plan, and Milton's Paradise Lost is simply the story of what we did wrong and Paradise Regained, what we must do to repair the mistakes that we have made. Well, I guess that's all, folks.